Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, y'all. I'm glad for you to see me. I guarantee.
Sunday at Spokane US 30 Drag Strip.
Watch the best rear engine field dragsters in the country.
Whoa, how about that? A Sunday radio show with Easy House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. I am here with
Dave Binkley, not from the convention, but from the home central control, from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're here with Coach.
That's right. Dave's right here in Erie House, sitting right next to me.
Yep, and Goat was really upset at me last night for not allowing him to be here without, you know, being on without him. But, you know, hey, what can I say?
Hey, I was kind of depressed without him, to tell you the truth. Truth be told, yeah. I missed the Goat.
Here's something to think about as we go on, and we'll maybe answer this later. I asked last night what your worst meal you ever had was. Let's think about during the show about maybe what are the best meal you ever had was, if you can think about that. You think it would be memorable.
Steak
you think
would
it would be memorable.
Somewhere.
So, just something, not right now, but for later on in the show, something to think about.
we had probably better say wedding cake. If we want to, you know, stay in the good graces of our better half.
Yeah, that's true. Yep, that's not a bad idea there.
Hey, I didn't stay married 35 plus years by being a dummy.
We don't have too many cooks to spoil the broth tonight. Just one cook, I think. One chef, I think.
Two chefs.
Maybe two chefs.
You're a bit of a chef, are you not?
Oh, I don't know. I can open a can of Chef Boyardee as good as the rest of them. Does that count?
No, man. I was out making shish kebabs today.
You know, because my wife does not let me play in the kitchen. Once I raised my boys and they were out of the house, she said, "Fine, you're done here. You can use the microwave once in a while, and that's it. You're not messing up my kitchen."
Oh, wow.
Any cooking skills I may have had. Oh, I do make gourmet pancakes, Dale. And
oh,
I
really?
Have them with hot dogs infused into them. Because after all, what's a bun? It's bread, right? What's a pancake? It's a bread.
It is, sort of. Yeah.
Well, it's a bread.
Okay.
Is it a vegetable? Is it a vegetable? No.
It is not a vegetable.
No. It is
not a meat.
Is it a piece of meat? No.
No, it's not a meat.
But can it have a piece of meat in it? Yes, it can.
Uh-huh.
It can have a hot dog, too, but, you know.
Why not?
Hot dog doesn't necessarily qualify as a piece of meat, but, you know. So I always tell my wife during Lent, I said, I'll go ahead and have a hot dog. That's not meat.
Now, I like to cook. I do. Every Wednesday and Sunday, including this morning, I make eggs for myself and the dog. Like, if he didn't finish his dinner, I'll mix that up in his food. I'll get some, scrambled eggs with cheese, you know?
And you make your wife starve? How generous of you.
She is not a breakfast person, nor is she a morning person, which is how I get away with being in the kitchen.
I understand both of those counts. I do. Not being morning and not being breakfast. I'm not really a big breakfast guy.
I still am not as voracious as I used to be. Oh, my God, when I was a kid, I couldn't move without like 3-4 bowls of cereal. Get jacked up on sugar and go.
I was just going to say, that's actually cranking up on sugar. Come on.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I was jacked up on it as a kid. Now sugar puts me to sleep. Oh, my goodness. It's not that funny. But
I got news for you. Anything puts me to sleep nowadays. So
know, when you have the sugar, sugar will and carbs will, carb coma comes along quite easily.
Ah.
Yes, it does. But we've got, as Dave mentioned yesterday, as he alluded to, tonight's show, a little bit disturbing.
It could be, yeah. Well, no, okay. It's not going to be. Could be. It is. It can. It is very it's disturbing. But remember, it's just a story. And I'm not going to say that this one was based on fact. I don't think so. This is a tale by another tale by Elspeth Eric, who is also an actress, but she's also a writer, and she wrote many episodes for the Radio Mystery Theater.
We've had one or two here, Dave, and she is a hell of a writer.
She always looks at things so uniquely to the male perspective that we're used to hearing on a lot of these stories. And this is another unique story with, again, with the Robert Dryden, Mary Higby, Ian Martin, and Arnold Moss, the great Arnold Moss. I just love his deep baritone. I really do. His presentation, he just, and that goes back to the, one of the earlier times that I've heard him when he did Dimension X, and it was the one about the there was a knock on the door. It was the last man on Earth, and there was a knock on the door. You know.
Yep. Which is one of my favorite stories from them.
X-Men Dimension X.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But in the Dimension X, I'm pretty sure that was Arnold Moss. That was the star of that one, because X-1 did it a couple times. Dimension X did it once. I'm pretty sure that's the one that Arnold Moss was in.
I know.
So, yeah, but they were all great. They were all great. But there's sometimes the actor with a little different perspective on it just makes it a little bit different. And
I thought the first time I heard Knock, Dave, I thought it was going to be like the Certain Ethnic joke, you know? The last man on Earth is a knock at the door. It's like going, Certain Ethnic astronaut, guy goes out for a spacewalk, knocks to come back in, and the guy inside goes, who is it?
It's just like Commander Clonk's not in Donnie, right?
Yes, exactly. He's there. Who is it?
He's ringing, he's knocking on the door and ringing the doorbell. Let me in.
Anywho, we should probably get things rolling here. A horror story from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Show number?
Yes. Show number 929, and comes to us from December 11th of 1970 and 8.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. Tell me the truth. Are you sensitive, impressionable, tender-hearted? Squeamish, maybe? Are your sensibilities easily offended? Are you fussy or persnickety? If you are all or any of these things, perhaps you had better not listen to what follows, for the tale we are going to tell you is aptly called a horror story.
Take them back. Take back these slippers.
You don't like them?
They are bewitched.
But they're so beautiful.
They are cursed. They are the spawn of Satan. Take them back.
Our mystery drama, A Horror Story, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Elspeth Eric and stars Robert Dryden. It is sponsored in part by Contact, the 12-hour cold capsule. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. You're probably sick of hearing that. But then, maybe not. In any case, let's get down to business. I'm Tony Randall, thank you. And I'm back again for Matus, the superb rosé and white wines that add dash to any holiday dish. Glazed ham, duck l'orange, smoked eel even.
or a partridge in a pear tree. Anyway, I bring glad tidings. Zesty Matus Rosé and Delectable White Matus have been graciously placed in special holiday gift cartons. Give each one separately, or give them together in a beautiful dual carton. Whichever way you choose to give them, you'll be giving friends the wines they choose to get. Remember, a gift is but a gift, but a gift of Matus is a gift of Matus.
Matus Rosé and White Matus, separately or together in holiday gift cartons, imported by Dreyfus Ashby & Company, New York, New York.
This winter, Delta Airlines invites you to become a stowaway. No, not on the plane. A stowaway at Stowe, Vermont, New England's most picturesque ski hideaway. Here's the plan. First, sneak on over to Stowe. Make your way up Mount Mansfield, Vermont's highest mountain. Then strap on the old skis and make a run for it. Down twisting, snowy trails that are as long as 3.5 miles. Delta's thrifty dream vacation price will go down easy, too. Just $207 per person, double occupancy, plus Delta airfare to Burlington. And it includes a room for 5 nights, unlimited lift tickets, breakfast and dinner daily, ski lessons, and airport transfers. For all the details, talk to your travel agent, and you too can become a Delta stowaway this winter.
Fly Delta from Chicago straight through to Burlington, Vermont any morning or afternoon. Stowe and Delta are ready when you are.
Been warned, you're about to hear as dreadful a tale as has ever been told, appalling in its frightfulness. So pause a moment. Think hard whether you're able to endure it. If you have qualms about listening, turn to something sweet and soothing. But I urge you to gather your courage and listen.
Nothing on the first floor, nothing on the second. Only the third floor remains to be explored. Why do I bother? Why do I persist? Well, if anyone cares, this place fascinates me. Has for 20 years. Ever since I first came to New Orleans in 1829 and saw a crowd of frightened people gathered outside this building on Common Street. By eavesdropping among them, I learned that they thought the place haunted by a collection of gruesome ghosts. Now, let's see what's in here. Oh, I declare, if the third floor yields no more than the other two, I say, what an exquisite fireplace. So delicate. Pure Adam. As a world traveler, I've become something of a connoisseur. Still, you... Oh, what's this? Looks like a loose brick in the chimney breast. Oh, really, the Count should take better care of... Let's see if I can pry it loose. Oh, yes, I can. Oh, why are people so neglectful? Still, no one comes here anymore. They're too frightened, I suppose. Imagine being afraid of ghosts. Got it. Good. Now, what may I find here? What could there be in the space behind the... Oh, yes, there's something. Yes. There's... A little book, bound in red Morocco leather, and that... Wait, what have we here? Oh, good gracious, a pair of shoes. Oh, how sweet, how dainty. Now back to the little book. Oh, my word, it's a diary, and the name embossed on the cover is plain as day, Gaston... Donnet.
Gaston Donnet.
Monsieur Sauvignet?
Come here immediately.
Something wrong, Monsieur Sauvignet?
An emergency. The Count is coming for dinner. It's his first visit to the Palais Sauvignet, and what do you think has happened? The head chef has had an accident, and he's in the hospital.
Oh, what a pity.
Well, you know who the Count is, don't you?
Oh, I know. What's to be done?
There's nothing to be done but turn the whole thing over to you, Gaston.
What? But I've been engaged as assistant chef. I don't have the capacity, the experience.
My friend, there is no help for it. I'll tell you what. I'll give you Pierre all to yourself.
Pierre? The scullery boy?
Well, he's been with me for 2 whole years.
Pierre?
Come here. You'll see Pierre is very knowledgeable.
Yes, Monsieur Le Chauvenet.
Pierre, my boy, who do you think will dine with us tonight?
Hmm?
The Count himself, friend to the king.
But the head chef, he's at the hospital.
Unhappily, but we must not let that affect us in the least. Monsieur Gaston Donnet here will be in charge.
Oh.
And you, Pierre, you are to leave everything else to others and devote yourself to him. Do you understand?
I understand.
Now, what shall we prepare for the Count, huh? Perhaps a leg of lamb, Eslington, with the proper vegetables. A Normandy sole before that. Oh, and for his particular pleasure, truffles served in the silver cocotte and wrapped in our finest linen napkin.
Oh, the poor Gaston Donnet, poor chap. It's no small thing to prepare a superlative dinner for an important client. I know. I've wandered the world. I've been in Paris, more than once. Well, let us read on in the diary what happens next. Ah, when the Count has eaten his dinner of truffles, of Normandy sole, of lamb Eslington, and all accompanied with the best wine, and all finished off with an exquisite plum brandy, what then?
Success, success, Gaston. Oh, what a great success.
I'm so happy, Monsieur Sauvignon.
He raved about the souffle. He was ecstatic over the leg of lamb. He all but kissed the vegetables. Oh, let the head chef stay in the hospital. You, Gaston Donnet, you are the best chef in all of Paris.
Oh, Monsieur Sauvignon, surely not.
Now listen, dear chap. The Count intimated to me just before he departed. He plans to come back soon.
It's too much.
Now, da-da-da, dry your eyes and get on home, because that's where I'm going. Pierre?
Monsieur?
You'll close the place, won't you, so that our heroic friend here can go home?
Yes, Monsieur Sauvignon.
Then good night, my valiant Gaston. Good night until tomorrow.
Good night.
Oh, what a glorious night it has been.
Aren't you going home, Monsieur Nene?
What? Home?
To tell your wife about your success.
I have no wife.
Well, there must be someone you can boast to.
Monsieur Sauvignon said the Count adored the souffle and the lamb. All but kissed the vegetables, he said. But he said nothing about the truffles.
No, he didn't.
The beautiful truffles in the silver cocotte. Pierre, did the Count enjoy the truffles, do you think?
Well,
if so, why didn't Monsieur Sauvignon mention it?
Well, they were a little overcooked.
Overcooked? You said overcooked?
I heard the Count remark to his lady friend that they were slightly overdone. After all, they require only 7 to 8 minutes, and the oven and yours were in there for 10.
That's not so. That's not so.
Oh, yes, I noticed. At least 10 minutes.
Why, you dirty little beggar.
Why, you... Keep away from me. Keep away from
sure
me.
That scum.
Knife. No, the knife. Put down the knife.
Filth.
Please.
Filth.
You killed me.
Piece of dirt. Nothing but a piece of dirt.
Oh, absolutely incredible. Fantastic. Oh, my, I'm not at all sure I should let you hear this part. It's well, we've read this far together, and I know you're perishing to find out what comes next. So, all right. Gaston Donnet, as you've heard, stuck a kitchen knife right through Pierre's heart, and Pierre fell down dead. Then Gaston, appalled at what he'd done, dragged the boy's body into the little cuisine, and there he...
Oh, there I tell you. There he removed Pierre's clothes and burned them in the small fireplace, ordinarily used to incinerate discarded skin and feathers and other rubbish. Then he... Oh, this is fantastic. He dissected and dismembered the body and removed every last bit of flesh. And then...
Really, this part is superb. He prepared the flesh in any number of ways. Marinated, stuffed, gratinated, minced, pickled, smoked. Oh, you do have to admire the man's ingenuity. I'll say you do. Then the following day, there was such an outcry in the kitchen.
Where is he? Where is that boy? Where is that good-for-nothing boy?
Gaston, heaven's name, what's the matter?
Stupid upstart. Pierre never showed up, Monsieur Sauvignet. I've waited all morning. I've searched the place. No sign of him. No word from him. Nothing.
Gaston, calm yourself.
What am I to do without a scullery boy?
I shall find you a scullery boy. Within the hour, you shall have a scullery boy, and a good one, too. Because you know what? The Count is repeating his visit.
The Count is?
He's enamored of your cooking. Who knows? One day he might invite the king to be his guest.
Would he come?
Who knows? Now, what shall we serve the Count tonight, huh?
Monsieur Sauvignet, is it true that the Count did not appreciate my truffles? I heard something to the effect...
Oh, that was nothing. A trifle overcooked, he said, but it was nothing. Now, for this evening, first some scampi, perhaps?
Leave the menu to me, monsieur. I shall prepare something incomparable, something new.
You don't want to tell me what you have in mind.
I want to work from my own inspiration, my own invention. I want it to be a surprise. Oh, I don't have to tell you, do I? That evening's repast was a mad success, a wild triumph, staff to finish. Such fragrance, freshness, such combinations of flavors, 8 courses, and each one better than the last. The Count and his dinner guests agreed to a man that never, never in their gastronomic lives had they enjoyed such a repast, and they sent a great storm of compliments to the genius chef. Oh, isn't it marvelous? Isn't it divine? For, of course, you know what they had eaten with such gusto.
Oh, my dear Gaston, let me kiss you both cheeks. Oh, I kiss your hands.
The Count and his friends enjoyed their dinner?
Enjoyed. They were rapturous, Gaston. They were ecstatic. They were beside themselves.
Ah, I'm so glad.
And the new scullery boy, Francois, he served you well?
Well enough.
Francois's a good boy, but you need no one but yourself and your incomparable talent.
Ah, you're very kind.
Gaston, I cannot keep a secret. I must tell you.
What secret is that?
The Count is coming back.
Oh?
And this time, tomorrow or the night after, but certainly within the week, he hopes to bring a guest, a solitary guest.
A lady?
Oh, I think not. A gentleman, a high-born gentleman. The most noble gentleman of them all.
What you mean?
A royal gentleman, Gaston.
Him?
Of course, he will come disguised. It wouldn't do.
Oh, no, no, of course not. No.
And the Count wants you to prepare for this noble, royal gentleman, the same dinner you prepared tonight.
The same?
The very same. Oh, my reputation is made. Just wait till everyone hears.
Francois, come here, my boy. Oh, and bring the large mallet with you, the one we use to hammer out the scallops. Oh, yes, that's the one. Hand it over. Thank you, Francois. Now, turn around. And I'll face the other way. Yes, that's it. Now stand very still. I'm sorry, Francois. But what else could I do?
It does
doesn't say in the diary if the Count's guest was actually the king himself, although it does say that both gentlemen enjoyed their dinner immensely and sent the most effusive compliments to the chef. However, according to what it says here, shortly thereafter, great outcries were raised by the mothers of the two vanished boys, and Gaston Donnet suddenly left Paris, never to return. Which is quite understandable, wouldn't you say?
Ready to continue? Be very sure, won't you? Because there's more to come. And if your heart stops or your hair turns white, don't blame me. I warned you, didn't I? Yes, I did. I told you from the very beginning, this is a horror story.
Whatever kind of shirt you're into, get into an Arrow.
Hey, Jim, that's a fantastic wool shirt.
Oh, thanks. It's an Arrow.
An Arrow? Hmm.
Whatever kind of shirt you want, Arrow's got it.
I love that turtleneck Hank's wearing. I bought it for him. It's an Arrow.
Whatever kind of shirt you're into, get into an Arrow.
When it comes to shirts, things are changing, but men are still changing into Arrow. Arrow gives you every style and all the confidence you expect from an Arrow.
That shirt looks great with your suit.
Sure, it's an Arrow.
Whatever kind of shirt you're into, get into an Arrow. Whatever kind of shirt you want, Arrow's got it.
Arrow makes all kinds of shirts for all kinds of men. That's why we're known as America's Shirt Maker.
You're invited to Northwest Federal's grand opening celebration. It's another new savings center in Elmhurst.
Elk Grove.
With free gifts for savers and a Hawaiian vacation sweepstakes. Stop by any Northwest Federal Savings Center, including Elmhurst,
Elk Grove,
and choose from over 20 terrific gifts. Free or for special low prices with a deposit of $250 or more. Our new Elmhurst
Grove
Savings Center has the same convenient hours as all our Northwest Federal Savings Centers, 63 hours a week. Come celebrate our Elmhurst
Elk Grove
grand opening. You could win one of two free trips to Hawaii. No transaction is necessary. Void where prohibited. Entrance must be 18 years of age or older. Contest ends March 8, 1979. Register today at any Northwest Federal location, including our
Elk
new...
Elk Grove!
Including both our new locations at Elmhurst and Elk Grove.
It's Northwest Federal savings time, 63 hours a week.
One more time.
It's Northwest Federal savings time, 63 hours a week.
Yep, Northwest Federal Savings. Where the hell are they now?
I think they're closed now.
Yeah, I think so.
I think they probably went out of business.
They'll be open soon.
They ran out of money.
Oh, quite a story going on there, huh?
Oh, my goodness. This guy is creepy, creepy,
yeah,
creepy.
I just reached for the Pepto-Bismol, Bromo Seltzer, and Milk of Magnesia.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of our writer here, Elspeth Eric, who did a lot of radio, some live television, a lot of radio. She wrote
like
116 episodes of the Mystery Theater. Looking back on this, she really preferred radio to television. And a matter of fact, once she had said at some point, let's see, after she was doing a live broadcast, she said in 55 newspaper article, Eric indicated that her preference for working in radio, there are no ulcers in radio, she said. The reporter noted she reports her 8 radio shows a week are easier than one week on TV and leave her more time for herself. So she just absolutely did not like television at all.
Oh, clearly not, but she did a heck of a job writing on these radio shows.
Yeah, and she also wrote for the Hyman Brown's other radio series at the same time, ran for one season, the General Mills Adventure Radio Theater. I think we played one of those, The Journey to the Center of the Earth. They've got a few in there that are really good. And, oh, The Black Room. I didn't realize that was hers. Yes, the black room, where the room was just black. And they were just kind of testing the guy to see how long he would last. Remember that one, Dale?
I do.
That was another Eric story. So,
yeah, she's a fine authoress.
Yes.
We need more of her work.
Well, not going to happen. No, she died at 85 in 1993 of cancer. So
I meant here on our Erie House.
Oh, that's what you meant. Yeah, okay. I get you now.
I wasn't recommending getting a shovel or anything.
Yeah. What? Not going to pull out the old Ouija board, are we?
No.
That's a long way to write, one letter at a time, you know?
Yep. Ouija. The shovel. What the hell's wrong with me? Well, we don't have that kind of time to answer that question. It's only an hour and a half show.
So true.
Little quiet in the chat today. We'll hopefully get some action going a little bit later on. But
yep. Everybody forgot we were here on Sunday. Oh, well.
Dave, you didn't exaggerate one bit. Oh, I was just going to say, you didn't exaggerate one bit when you said this was going to be a creepy one.
This is a creepy one.
No kidding. Wow.
Creepy ain't over yet.
Uh-oh.
That was just act one.
That's the warm up. That's the warm up. Yeah. Yeah, we got a whole lot of radio to go yet. And we might as well get the goose flesh rising a little bit more with part two of A Horror Story. With Horror Ghost.
Shall we proceed, sweet ladies, kind gentlemen? Remember, this tale has come down to us in the form of a legend, built little by little by one storyteller after another, each one delighted in what he had been told and then added whatever provocative details he thought might captivate his audience and seduce it into listening longer. That is, after all, how legends have come into being since the world began.
Ready for the diary again, And for a change of scene? In 1829, New Orleans was already a fair city and a prosperous one. A proud and stylish and extremely forceful man, Mr. Poncet, was the leading citizen of New Orleans. And into his office one day stepped a sturdy, aggressive man who looked to be about 50 years of age.
Mr. Poncet, I believe.
The same, sir. And whom do I have the pleasure of addressing?
My name is Ferraud, sir. Lucien Ferraud.
A stranger to New Orleans?
Oh, not completely, sir. I have been plying my trade for some months.
And your trade is?
I am a shoemaker.
You mend shoes, do you?
No, I do not mend shoes, Mr. Poncet. I make shoes by hand. I cut every piece of leather. I sew every stitch with these two hands.
I see. Well, now, what can I do for you, Mr. Ferraud?
Everyone tells me you are the most influential man in New Orleans. I want to buy that building on Common Street.
Which one do you have your eye on?
The one with three stories, six chimneys. It's the only one vacant at present.
And you want to move your shoemaking enterprise into that building?
I do, sir.
Isn't it a bit large? Three floors?
One floor. The first one will suffice for my workroom. The third floor, that will be my home. I have walked through it. The light is wonderful. And the exquisite fireplaces in every room.
But do you need so many rooms, a man living alone?
But I shall not be living alone. I got married yesterday.
Did you now? Well, that's splendid. Congratulations.
As soon as Camille said yes, I made up my mind that the building on Common Street must be mine. You, You're married?
I am a widower. But my beloved wife blessed me with a daughter, my angelic Monique, who is more precious to me than all the world's treasure.
Now, of course. How old is Monique?
17 in a few months. Soon she will make her debut.
Oh, how splendid.
It will be splendid, I promise you that, sir. I'm willing to spend half of all I've got to see that she's introduced to society in the grand style.
Perhaps when she has chosen her gown and had it made, perhaps you would come to me for the shoes.
Perhaps I shall. By the way, Farreau, what do you propose to do with the second floor? You'll have your little shop on the first, you'll have your living quarters on the third, but what about the second? What'll you do with that?
Oh, I'll find a use for it.
Things are settling down. Quite a prosaic little diary, after all. There are lots of mundane details I won't bother to pass on to you, all about Farreau fixing up the top floor, this very floor which I stand on now, and moving in with his rather colorless wife, Camille. Grandiose claims of how his shoemaking industry flourished. A lot of petty boasting that you wouldn't be interested in. But now... yes. Here it starts to get interesting again. You like this part, I think.
Good morning. I was looking for Mr. Lucien Farreau. Is he here?
He's gone out on an errand.
But he will be back.
He didn't say when.
Oh. I wanted to ask him to make something for me, something very special for my daughter, Monique Ponce. You work here for Mr. Farreau?
I'm his wife.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. I haven't had the pleasure. Tell me, Mrs. Farreau, are you enjoying your new home?
It's very nice.
Your husband's fame is spreading, you know, all over New Orleans.
So he tells me.
Everyone says his slippers are the softest, the most pliable, so flexible. The ladies who worn them say they can dance all night and on into the morning.
So I've heard.
I'll tell you why I'm here, Mrs. Farreau. I wanted to order a pair of his wonderful slippers for my daughter, Monique. Look here, I brought a swatch of the material her dress is to be made from. My daughter has dark hair and dark eyes. Well, you can see, this is the material.
Damask, isn't it?
I believe that is what they call it. White damask, with just the faintest little thread of gold running through it.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Now, if your husband can make shoes to match, will he be back soon, do you think?
I've got no way of knowing. He never tells me anything.
Oh, well, I'll wait a bit.
Suit yourself.
Tell me, your husband has rented out the second floor, hasn't he?
Yes, he has.
To a restaurateur, I believe. A private dining salon, they say.
So they say.
Small, but elegant.
So I've heard.
Oh, forgive me, Mrs. Farreau, but you talk as though you'd never seen it.
I never have.
Well, I am surprised. Your husband makes an excellent investment, and you don't even care to see it?
Oh, I care.
It's grown famous all over New Orleans. The cuisine, everyone raves about it.
So he tells me.
But you have never dined there.
Oh, no. Here's my husband now.
Ah, Mr. Ponce.
Well, glad to see you, Mr. Farreau.
Mr. Ponce wants to order a pair of slippers.
Oh, fine, fine.
For Monique, for my daughter. I showed your wife the material her dress is being made from. You see, this is a small swatch.
Very nice.
I can get more if you'd care to make the slippers to match exactly.
No. No, that wouldn't do at all.
Well, I simply thought...
I have my own materials.
Well, if you insist...
I do insist. My materials are 1,000 times more pliant than this damask.
Oh, whatever you say, Farreau. Well, good day, Mrs. Farreau.
Good day.
How long was he here?
Only a few minutes, Lucien.
That's all.
We chose to wait for you.
What did you two talk about?
Oh, your success for the most part. He mentioned the restaurant on the second floor. He asked if I'd ever dined there.
He asked you that?
Of course I said I hadn't. I said I'd never even set foot in the place. Why can't I see it, Lucien?
Because I say you can't.
But why can't I? I'd like to so much, Lucien.
I've already told you why you can't.
Because you say I can't.
Precisely.
I see. But I'd certainly like to.
I hesitate to tell you what the next few pages of the diary hold. Oh, I don't think I can read on. Yet I must, if we're ever to finish this macabre tale. So I'll just tell you straight out. The secret material Pharaoh used for his extraordinary slippers was human skin. There, I've said it. And the source of his supply was the slave market. Oh, my word, what a really terrible fellow he was. Yet you do have to admire his enterprise and his courage in setting it all down here. You do have to respect that, don't you? Yes, sir? Do you have a reservation?
Oh, I guess. The name is Ponce, table for two.
Ah, may I show you to your table, Mr. Ponce?
I suppose you might as well, but keep an eye out for my daughter, will you? We're dining together. She has dark hair, dark eyes, and she'll arrive alone.
I'll watch for her and bring her to you. Ah, here's your table. Can I order you an aperitif?
Oh, no, thank you. I'll just wait for my daughter.
As you wish, sir.
My appetite has been whetted by what I've heard of your cuisine. I'm looking forward to...
I beg your pardon. I think I see a lady alone. It could be your daughter.
Monique. Her name is Monique.
Good evening, madame. You're expecting a gentleman?
No, I'm by myself. I just wanted to see what it looks like.
The management does not permit ladies unescorted.
Are you the owner?
I am the owner. Now, if you please...
Lucien Ferraud is my husband. He's your landlord.
I cannot permit you to stay.
He owns this entire building. It's his shoe shop on the first floor. I help him there sometimes. And we live on the third floor. But I've never set foot on this floor. And I thought...
Absolutely impossible.
If I could just look in this once.
On the other hand, come with me. I'll show you the whole place.
Oh, it's lovely.
I'll show you everything.
You're very kind.
Through this door here, if you please.
Is there another room?
Yes. Through here.
Oh, but...
Gone.
But I don't... But this is the kitchen.
It is the kitchen, and that is the back door.
But I don't want...
And you're leaving by the back door.
No, I don't...
You're leaving now.
I don't want to leave.
Now, Camille, this instant.
You called me Camille.
Oh. Oh, Lord.
How do you know my name?
Shut up, woman. Shut up.
Why? Lucien. It's you. What on earth have you done to yourself?
Shut your mouth.
But you look so young. You sound so young. You're quite different.
You be quiet and get out, Camille, or you'll ruin me.
What's the point of this masquerade? Why are you pretending to be two people? You're a fine shoemaker. Why do you have to be a chef as well?
Why should I be one man when I can be two?
But which is my husband? What is my name? You can't go on with this deception. You must stop.
Never. Never. We shall be so rich, Camille.
No. No. I won't go on this way. I can't. I don't know who I am, who you are. I'll tell. I'll tell everyone.
You'll tell no one.
No. You're joking me. No.
Oh, Camille. Poor Camille, why did you do it? Why did you come here
just when everything was going so well. Poor Camille, indeed. For her desperately ambitious husband strangled her right there in his own kitchen. And then... Oh, merciful heavens, I hate to tell you what comes next, what it says here. As he looked around him, and the pots and the pans and all the accoutrements of his profession, the thought crossed his mind that... Oh, how can I say it? He thought to himself, what a fabulous, what a fantastic dish I shall serve my customers tomorrow night.
The strange, the weird, the grotesque, the bizarre. We so seldom encounter such things in our ordinary lives. They are confined to the world of fantasy, of fiction, of fable. And for my own part, I am perfectly content that such should be the case. I'll be back shortly with Act Three.
Know what really makes Christmas special for our family? Doing the expected, the traditional things. We get together and sing the same old Christmas carols, listen to Uncle Henry's corny stories, and we always put a Whitman sampler out in the hall. It's part of the Christmas tradition with us. In fact, that Whitman sampler is as much a part of our Christmas as Uncle Henry's corny stories.
Whitman's, part of America's Christmas for 136 Christmases.
Take your contact, take it now. Give your code to contact.
I'm going to change your mind about nighttime cold medicine. You see, of all major medicines, only one works up to 12 hours against the cloggy virus symptoms that keep you awake. Only contact. One capsule's relief stays with you all through a long night's sleep, no matter what cold virus attacks. Only contact.
Give your code to contact.
Take only as directed.
This winter, Delta Airlines invites you to become a stowaway. No, not on the plane. A stowaway at Stowe, Vermont, New England's most picturesque ski hideaway. Here's the plan. First, sneak on over to Stowe. Make your way up Mount Mansfield, Vermont's highest mountain. Then strap on the old skis and make a run for it. Down twisting, snowy trails that are as long as 3.5 miles. Delta's thrifty green vacation price will go down easy, too. Just $207 per person, double occupancy, plus Delta airfare to Burlington. And it includes a room for 5 nights, unlimited lift tickets, breakfast and dinner daily, ski lessons, and airport transfers. For all the details, talk to your travel agent, and you too can become a Delta stowaway this winter.
Fly Delta from Chicago straight through to Burlington, Vermont, any morning or afternoon. Stowe and Delta are ready when you are.
I'm ready. Hey, good old Bob joins us in the chat. Welcome. You're catching a good one. This is a really... I got the willies.
I told you. It's not an easy story to listen to, but it's a good one.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it's fabulous.
I almost had second thoughts about sharing this one, but no story to leave out.
That's true. So I guess you won't have to pay any alimony now.
Apparently not.
Something I just remembered about the story when it was on live. I didn't hear it that night. Now, I had a buddy with a paper route, so he recorded these onto 8-track. And he had these big storage of 8-track tapes of the Mystery Theaters, and I got to hear it because of this. And something happened at the beginning here locally at the broadcast, so I never knew. Although he kept saying this is a real horror story, we missed the opening where it actually said that the story was called a horror story. So I didn't know what the title of it was, even though E.G. Marshall said it throughout the entire show.
It is, in fact, a horror story. Yep.
A horror story.
It most definitely is. Yeah, he wasn't. They didn't have a TV. They weren't allowed to have a TV in their house. So he loved that they had the Mystery Theater on. So he lived for that show.
Absolutely.
So
a good
they couldn't have
now.
A TV, but they let their child listen to this. Okay.
Yeah. I, for one, follow the logic.
All right.
You have a stroke, kid. It's your own imagination and your own damn fault. Oh, my kids are going to write a novel when I'm gone.
Oh my goodness. Another sterling lesson in child raising. Ah, yes. Dr.
Yep.
Frankenstein would approve.
Absolutely.
Yes. All part of my plan. Michael will never get rid of that twitch.
Yep. Got to be careful with plans, though. Jay Bach was saying how he tried to get his kid to really love baseball and have a career in baseball, and so he took him there and they played the game. They saw the game happen and the players come out and they hit home runs and all that, and he took his kid home. And his wife called him. He went back to work. His wife called him. Well, your plan's starting to work. He said, well, really, what is he out catching the ball? She says, no. Is he out like throwing the ball, like pitching the ball? She says, no. Said, what's he doing? He says, well, he picked up a cardboard box, turned it upside down, and walked down the neighborhood saying, beer, cold beer here.
That's cold beer here. Oh, I love it.
He found his calling young.
Yes. Found
a career
early
man.
Life.
He's a career man.
Sure you are. But, oh, wow. This is the ultimate in the macabre. Wow. I mean.
Macabre.
Macabre. This yes. is. The macaroni, the macarena, no. The macaroons, the macaroni.
Don't let Dale confuse you on this one, CW. He is wrong.
What? You said the W word, Dave.
I
guess in this politically correct
word.
World, we're not allowed to tell somebody they're wrong. Can you say they're incorrect?
I don't know.
Oh, there you go.
It might hurt my feelings. Don't do it. I have feelings.
Yeah, but the feelings are at the end of your fingers. So, and at the end of your toes when you run into something in the middle of the night. That's where your feelings are.
I see.
Okay, fine.
You are incorrectly correct.
Yes. If it weren't for facts, you'd be fine.
That's true.
Ah, yeah.
There you go. That's the way you say it. Mm. Well, if it wasn't for facts, you'd be right. You'd be spot on. Oh, goodness. Heard from Gar?
Oh,
well, sort of heard from him earlier today.
Yes,
he's still struggling. We can't wait till he comes back.
Yeah, I talked to him a couple days ago myself. He just, he sounds our age, Dale.
Yeah, the poor guy.
Oh, poor thing.
Our age, near death.
Is it? Please feel better. Please do your best, get better. And
they're attacking his problem in a different direction now. I'm hoping that will bring him back.
Yeah, like so. Giving him some treatment would be nice.
Yeah, that would be nice. Yeah.
That's a novel approach, you know. Perhaps actually a doctor that looks at him for more than a minute, if that.
What kind of time do you think these guys have now? Come on, CW.
I'm dreaming.
Than you
pie
and
in
me
the sky.
Than their doctors.
Of course.
Ask them.
Where's a Dr. Jekyll when you need one?
I know. He makes things so much better.
Oh, yes. They just split the situation in half and problem solved.
Yeah. One half of them doesn't know the answer, the other does. Good strategy.
There you go.
Anyway, let's get ourselves chilled and thrilled just a little bit more with the probably terrifying conclusion of a horror story. Uh-oh.
Back to our legend, which was invented to curdle your blood and freeze the marrow in your bones. If it has not done so, then it has failed in its purpose. For to make you gasp, exclaim, to make the hairs on your body stand on end, why, that is the very proper purpose of a horror story.
I'm feeling better now, able to read on, I think. There's a passage here that reveals what you must already have guessed. The proprietor of the restaurant on the second floor was not only Lucien Ferraud, he was likewise Gaston Donnet from Paris. Oh, dear me, how things have turned around in this world. It's enough to make one's head spin. Well, anyway, the diary goes on quite calmly for a while, and then...
Ah, Mr. Ferraud.
Mr. Poncet, welcome to my little shop.
You're looking extremely well.
Oh, thank you. I never felt better.
And your charming wife, is she doing well?
Satisfactorily, thank you.
I'm sorry not to see her.
She's elsewhere.
You know, it was to your wife that I first showed the little swatch of damask. She admired it so much. And I told her about Monique's debut. She seemed most interested.
Yes, I'm sure she was.
Oh, yes, we had nice little chat. We spoke of your tenant.
My tenant?
The man to whom you let the second floor.
Oh, yes.
And the restaurant that he opened. Why, it's become almost as famous in New Orleans as your delectable little slippers.
Has it indeed? Yes. Well, shall I fetch the slippers, Mr. Poncet, for your daughter?
Ah, Monique slippers.
Yes.
Of course. That's what I came for.
I have them right here. Here they are.
Oh, Mr. Ferraud. Oh, my friend.
You like them?
Like them? I have no words to convey what I feel. How white they are. How pure and white.
Yes.
Oh, they are like jewels. Royal jewels.
I call them my masterpiece.
Has your wife seen them?
Any? No. I haven't shown them to her.
It'd be so nice if she were to come in right now.
That is unlikely.
And before I take them home?
You might have a long wait.
Yes, you're right. I must take them home and show them to Monique. God bless you, Ferraud, and give you continued success.
Have you guessed it? Has your clever little mind penetrated the secret of Lucien Ferraud's latest adventure? Have you succeeded in following the intricacies of his criminality? If so, I don't have to tell you that the soft and subtle slippers which Mr. Poncet carried home in triumph were made of the white, young skin of Camille Ferraud.
Ferraud! Are you here? Where are you, you rogue? Come out here! Mrs. Ferraud, are you here? I must see your husband at once. It is imperative. Well, I must see someone. I must see someone now.
You were looking for me?
You villain, you monster.
Something is wrong, sir.
Fiend, a devil.
I, Mr. Poncet, for what...
Or are you a sorcerer, a wizard?
Mr. Poncet,
or do you have the evil eye? Confess, you barbarian.
But what is it?
What must I confess to?
Oh, you know very well.
No, I don't. Mr. Poncet, you left here an hour ago with the slippers. You seemed happy.
The slippers, yes, yes, the slippers.
You don't like the
Those
slippers?
Those cursed slippers, the abominable
Your
slippers.
Your daughter does not like the slippers.
There are your slippers. Take them.
You're bringing them back?
You take them and never let me see them again.
You don't want them.
You unwrap them and you'll see. Unwrap them and see what you have created. Unwrap them and behold your masterpiece.
I shall.
Not in my presence, you won't. Wait till I'm out the door and never come near me again.
What in the world? What went wrong? What? What's that? What's that sound? Can it be... Is it in here? My slippers! My beautiful white slippers! What's got into them? What are you saying? Are you mad? Wait, girl, come back! Stay still! Where are you going? What's got into you? No! No, don't touch me! Not me! Not me! Stay away from me! I'll go upstairs. They're following me. He was leaving. If I can get to my own floor, my own place. One more floor. To the top. I'll hide. Yes. I'll hide here. Fire! They're here! They got in! They're coming at me! They're on me! They're crawling up my back! My hair! On my face! Oh, no! They're sliding down my back! Good luck! Oh! Heavenly Father, they're on my diary! No one must ever see my diary! No one will ever know what I have done! If anyone is to know... No! Heaven forbid! Where can I hide it, son? Yes! I'll hide it here, behind this brick in the chimney! Yes! Here! Behind this brick! No one will ever find it! As if we've got the brick! Hold on! The slippers have skittered into the chimney. They're sitting on top of the diary. At any rate, they're not chasing me. Put back the brick now. Have peace. A little peace. Yes. Quiet. No noise. All quiet now. It's all very quiet. Camille, where are you? Where have you gone, Camille? And Francois? And Pierre? The police. They're here to get me. They're going to arrest me. But what have I done? I haven't done anything, just tried to make a living. Had a little success, and I'm innocent! I'm innocent!
Dear friends and citizens, may I have your attention? I know you expect from me some explanation of what was found in the place on Common Street a few weeks back. The authorities have said that I might tell you all that is known, though how it all came about is a matter for conjecture. When the police broke in on the third floor of the Common Street building, they found... Be brave, my friends. Be prepared for something... horrendous. They found a dead man. They think they recognized him as the owner of the building, though to be brutally honest, they could not be absolutely sure because the body, good people, had been skinned. Yes, my friends, they have concluded that this poor man went mad and flayed himself alive.
I know what you're saying to yourself. Yes, I do. You're saying, how could he read all that last part in the diary? How could anybody have written it down with the slippers carrying on like that? It's impossible. Well, you're right. The reason I know what happened is that I am Gaston Donnet, later Lucien Ferraud. That is to say, I am his astral, his etherical body, vulgarly called a ghost. So I know all about it. Oh, and that banging at the door that poor Donnet Ferraud thought was the police? No, not so. It was two ordinary men who knocked. One wanted to buy the restaurant for an astronomical sum. The other had come all the way from Paris. A certain wealthy count had died and left a quantity of money to Gaston Donnet in memory of a marvelous meal he had cooked for the count some years before. All that work for nothing. Where did I go wrong? Where?
It seems clear that there was a place on Common Street in New Orleans 150 years ago, and a man certainly did rent it and opened a shoe shop on the first floor and rented out the second floor for a restaurant and lived with his wife on the third floor, and later died. And no doubt there was something strange about the man, but those are all the verifiable facts we have. As for the rest, well, you know how people talk, and as they talk, legends are born, and legends grow, and legends never die. I'll be back shortly.
If you're a driver, if you're actually driving a car right now, consider this. 55 miles per hour saves you gasoline, and you know how much money that can cost you these days. 55 miles an hour saves you other troubles you don't need, like the worry about that car behind you with the flashing light on top. It's after somebody else. 55 also saves wear and tear on your car. But even more important than any of those things, 55 saves lives. Since 1974, when this national speed limit began, driving 55 miles an hour has been the single biggest factor in reducing highway deaths by more than 36,000 people.
That's a lot of lives.
So check your speedometer frequently. And remember, 55 saves lives. One of them could be you.
A public service of this station, the U.S. Department of Transportation, and the Advertising Council.
The horror story in modern literature started with The Castle of Otranto, written by Horace Walpole, quickly followed by The Mysteries of Udolpho by Anne Radcliffe. Honoré Balzac took up the form and improved on it in France. Bulwer Lytton rivaled him in England. And in America, it was brought to a peak by our own Edgar Allan Poe. Let's face it, the horror story is here to stay. Our cast included Robert Dryden, Mary Jane Higby, Ian Martin, and Arnold Moss. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Not possible. First, because you have to see me to know that I am your mother.
You mean you have proof?
I have the best proof in the world.
What?
You will see.
All right. But you'll have to come here, to my house.
Very well. I know the address. I will be there within 15 minutes.
Madame Baron.
Something wrong, Sue?
She hung up.
Is she coming here?
Yes. She'll be here in 15 minutes, she said.
She said she has proof? Proof that she's your real mother?
Yes. What proof? She said I would see for myself. I don't want her to be my mother. I don't want to see her.
Mrs. E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our mystery theater for another adventure in the macabre.
Macabre.
Until next time, pleasant dreams. That was a
Wow. Yeah. Well, that gives a whole new meaning to I'll tan your hide for sure.
Oh, jeez, yeah. Literally. I didn't even like the guy telling the story. He kind of creeped me out a little bit. Just a little creepy for me.
But, the part of the cast was one of the sons of Brooklyn, Arnold Moss.
Yep. The great Arnold Moss.
Love that. Yep. The great Arnold. Who turned a Brooklyn accent into a continental verb. Wow.
Yep. Much like our dear friend Jonathan Harris. Also.
Absolutely.
Turned around his accent.
And that's another Brooklynite.
Yes. Another Brooklynite makes good and makes himself sound like he's from somewhere completely different.
Different.
Well done.
Yes. Outstanding. Very well done, Jen. Very well done. I bet they occasionally slipped back into the neighborhood and slipped on the accent again. And just because.
Yeah. Why not? Could be fun. So we got a little bit of time left. Maybe, just maybe, we could spin the wheel. What do you think?
Ooh.
Wheel of radio?
I think we can manage that. Manage
yep.
that indeed.
Dave had to fly, so if you would like to step up to the dais and give that wheel a tug.
I shall...
We'll get something fun
Very
on here.
Well, I'm in my special slippers, provided they don't go screaming through the room. And
yes.
Spin, 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 spin the wheel.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Stardust Time with Bob and Ray.
Jack Headstrong.
Jack Headstrong.
Jack Headstrong.
Jimmy Powers.
Jack Headstrong, all American American.
Yes, boys and girls, it's time again to join Jack, Billy, Uncle Jim, and Betty as Jack works on his newest invention, an atomic phonograph. And in his factory at Hudson, we hear Jack say...
Over here, just a second... Uncle Jim.
Oh, Jack.
Quiet, Billy. There's no time for
Quiet,
that now.
Quiet, Billy.
Quiet, Uncle Jim. There's no time for that now.
You want the loudspeaker now, Jack?
Yes, please.
All right.
I'll just...
Oh, it's got a picture
please.
Of a dog on it, Jack.
Quiet, Billy. There's no time for that now.
Billy, you'll have to be quiet. Jack's been working on this for a good many weeks now. This is the first test, and if it works out, you really have something.
Well, the cat certainly hasn't got your tongue, Uncle Jim, has he, eh?
Quiet, Uncle Jim.
Quiet, Billy, there's no time. Oh. Quiet, everybody.
Well, let's try it out, Jack. Is the voice of that little cylinder going? Must need an adjustment, Jack.
No, I think the only thing here... Well, you fool, Billy. Why don't you watch
what
you're doing?
Well, it wasn't working right, Jack. So
but that didn't mean for you to reach over, pick it up, and smash it against the wall.
Oh, that's an expensive piece of equipment, Billy.
Yeah,
don't you have another one, Jack? You can
yes,
try
I have one here. I think maybe that either we have to slow down the speed of this cylinder or learn to listen faster. I think we'll give it one more try. No. impossible for me to learn to listen any quicker than I am right now, and it's gibberish to me.
I'm listening as fast as I can, Jack, and I don't get a word.
It's gibberish to you, too, right?
Well, Billy, don't throw that one away, too. It might work later. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm afraid I'll have to ask both you, Uncle Jim, and you, Billy, to leave my experimental garage.
I think that's a very good idea, Jack. Come on, Billy. Where's your tricycle?
It's right outside, Uncle Jim.
I'll raise your voice. So once again, Jack's latest experiment fails to work. But will he be daunted? Be sure and listen next time when we'll hear Jack say,
I'm afraid you could describe me as being soft as a grape, yes.
In the next episode of Jack Headstrong, All-American American.
It's pretty good. Bob and Ray.
Oh, my gosh. What a name for a character. Jack Headstrong.
Sounds like a kid's toy. Jack Headstrong.
Strong. Jack
Twist
Headstrong.
Twist him. Spin him.
Stretch. Twist him. It's Jack Headstrong versus Action Jackson.
There you go. Yes, indeed. Well, Dave had to take off, so it's okay. You and me to wrap it up tonight. Mm-hmm. And Dave left us with toys.
Toys. Sharp-edged things.
Yep, I think I'm going to reach up and spin the wheel again myself, if you don't mind, miss.
Oh,
I think there's some more goodies to be had.
Oh,
let's give it a spin. Here we go. Wait. Oh.
Around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
I've heard that before.
Well, it's 11:14 at News Radio 22, and here with Recipe Corner is Alan Sodden.
This is Alan Sodden with Recipe Corner, and today's guest cook is Chef Henri Fromage, who will tell us about a special dish for the holidays. What do you call it, Chef?
I call this dish fish brains a la Chicago.
Boy, sounds delicious. Fish brains a la Chicago. What do we do, Chef?
You take one number toucan of fish brains, or you can get frozen fish brains, 2 pounds, or you can use dried fish brains, 1.5 pounds. Now, you take...
Me, Chef, but you haven't mentioned fresh fish brains.
You wouldn't like it. Take the fish brains and soak in cold water. Meanwhile,
how long do you soak?
1 week. More or less. Meanwhile...
Pardon me, Chef. I hate to interrupt, but you haven't mentioned what kind of fish brains to use. Do you have any particular fish in mind?
Oh, it makes no difference. All fish are stupid.
So, I see.
And you take 2 potatoes, medium, or 1 potato, large, or 1/2 potato, very large. Or if you have a giant potato, you take 1/4. Now, of course, it is possible that you have a potato that is truly remarkable. A potato stupendous, gigantique.
Chef, if you find one of those real terrors, what do you do?
You take a photograph and send it to Guinness.
I see. But how about your recipe?
You keep interrupting. Take the potatoes and cut them into cubes. 1/8 inch on each side.
1/8 inch cubes, right.
Some people get careless and cut the potatoes into 16th cubes. Or 3/16. This is wrong. 1/8 is 2/16. You do it the way I say.
1/8 inch, right.
You cut them up in 1/16 or 3/16. You make a mess. You take the heart out of the dish. You make the whole thing fake. Who do you think you are to make it your way? What do you think I come in here for and talk on this stupid microphone? Do you think I have nothing better to do? Don't bother me. Go out and eat fast food. This recipe is wasted on you.
You don't know how to eat. You're a bunch of pigs.
Thank you, Chef Henri. And tune in tomorrow when our guest cook will be a little kid.
And there you have it, friends, Alan Sodden's Recipe Corner.
That's Andy Griffith and Harry Morgan. A little fun there. On Recipe Corner.
Ah, yes. The recipes. Note that everybody who was doing all these dastardly deeds to the culinary palate seems to be French. I mean, New Orleans, French cooking, everything. Yeah, is that telling us something about the New French?
Yeah, they can't win a world war to save their ass, but they can cook like crazy.
Yes. Oh. Wow. No. Okay. All no. Right. Yeah.
Just a joke.
I mean,
just
what are
America?
Yeah. Yes. Come to America to discover the best way to murder a hamburger. Yeah. Cheeseburger, 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 cheeseburger.
There you go. It's cheeseburger season, you know. I know you're not a meat eater, but it is the season.
Yes. Well, if I was a meat eater before this this particular episode, I certainly wouldn't be now. But
oh,
I
yeah.
Yes, it's the season to fire up the handy-dandy, trusty barbecue to throw the briquettes on there, a couple of gallons of gasoline. The fire brigade.
The fire brigade.
Cruising by your house. There you are.
They've got our house on speed dial. Yeah, no. That's the good thing about, like, grilling outside. And if you don't like meat, you know what I mean? There's lots of good stuff you can throw on a grill.
Absolutely. You wrap it up in lots of fresh, extra virgin, herb-infused olive oil.
Yes.
Crisp, fresh, sweet corn, and you just wrap it in there, and it comes out all toasty and lovely. And have you ever tried grilling barbecue? You get that extra lovely sweetness, pineapple on the barbecue. Ooh.
You're not kidding. Today we did some meat, but we also had zucchini, squash, white onion, red onion, multicolored peppers, bell peppers. What else? Oh, a bunch of small tomatoes. Not the great,
cherry tomatoes?
But the bigger ones. Yeah, the bigger ones.
Romanos?
No, they're not as big as Romanos, but they're like very large cherry tomatoes. Because the really small ones, they get squooshed. They explode. They don't hold up to the heat very well. So you want a heartier tomato to put on the skewer.
Oh, yes. It's Attack of the Killer Tomatoes revenge. Cook us, and we explode.
Yeah, nothing worse than plucking tomato guts out of your eye socket, I'll tell you. Especially when it's got some steaming olive oil on it. Ew.
Yes, with lots of garlic.
Mm. Yeah, oh yeah. Garlic is a must. Garlic is a must.
Yep. Another personal fave, grilled asparagus.
Yes, also good. I'm the only one in the house that likes asparagus. None of them do. None of these other ingredients like asparagus.
Yeah, don't you grow? I'm shocked. Shocked and appalled. Wounded to the quick. Wow. How do they stand you in the house?
Yeah, I don't know. ask that anyway. We probably got time for one quick song here before we set people up for next weekend.
Oh, yes.
Well, we'll return to our Friday-Saturday schedule starting next week, but I think I have a coin in me pocket.
Are you gonna sit and suffer? No, sir. Get up and say, boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, we are fighting for freedom and for joy. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, when we hit 'em, it will be the real McCoy. There are bumps, bumps, bumps in the road, and we're toting a darn heavy load. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, we are fighting for freedom and for joy. Sure, there's trouble, guns are popping, interferes with Christmas shopping.
Yes, sir, the skies are gray.
We know life is what we make it. Are we gonna sit and take it?
No, sir, get up and say, boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy,
got a country that
nothing
can
destroy. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy,
here's a country a fellow can enjoy. With the whole world going to pot, brother, look around and see what we've got. 'Cause
boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, we'll keep fighting for freedom and for joy.
Oh, boy. All right, next week on Erie House, we want you to just get a room. Get a room. Yep. Lots of room stories. The Goon Show coming back. That's right, on Friday, The Goon Show, Suspense and Crisis. That's Friday at 6:30 Eastern. Saturday, it's the return of CBS Radio Mystery Theater with a story called The Waiting Room. All right, so... if you can't get a room, we'll give you one or several stories about them. Anyway, that's next week. You know, keep your well wishes and good feelings going towards our pal, Gar the Ghoul. We want to see him get well soon.
Most definitely.
Thanks, good old Bob, for absolutely dropping by tonight in the chat. And let's
and
see.
And all you netizens out there as well.
Yep, and let's wrap up Chef Weekend with a little something from Martin Yan.
Until next time, if Yan can cook, so can you. Join in.
There you go. Thank you. I used to love to watch him make the chicken dance. He'd stick his hand inside a chicken.
Oh, geez.
He was just a fun guy. Him and Justin Wilson would crack me up. But Justin Wilson was, as Dave pointed out yesterday, was a humorist. I've heard some of his early albums. You can find them on YouTube.
Cool.
He did, he did stand-up way down south. He told some pretty funny stories. He would incorporate some of those funny stories into his cooking show.
Ooh, I guarantee.
Guarantee. And so let's get the great one, Mr. Vincent Price, over here to guide us on our way out the door. And we'll see you Friday at 6:30 Eastern.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her, and only
when
her.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone. Can
back
you
dig it? Come back into the archive and listen to some cheap gossip. No. Ouch. Oh, that timing was perfect. The door slammed and the live show ended just like that. It's almost like I knew what
Perfection.
I was doing.
Oh, my. Keep the fable alive.
Yes. Fun show.
Dave,
this one, this one was creepy.
Dave was not kidding. This is super dark. I mean, wow.
Yeah. Well, Elizabeth was one heck of a writer. We did a show kind of about her, or I don't know. The last one we played that she wrote was also a very good tale. Quite the writer.
I don't know. I think this must have been some sort of therapy, writer's therapy, to evict some really dark thoughts out of her mind and share them with the audience.
Well, you wonder about that because, you know, well, of course, we know that Mr. Poe had a very unhappy life, so it seemed.
You know, I read a couple of different biographies. I haven't read the wonderful gentleman, Mark...
Dowiziak.
I will forever be apologizing to him ad infinitum for not being able to pronounce the gentleman's name properly. I'm sorry. I can say Penobscot and Snuffleupagus properly, but I can't seem to say his name.
Yeah, I got some of that ethnicity going on, so I had a little bit of luck with his last name. A good name, and a good guy, very knowledgeable, and he brought a lot of facts to us. I'd love to see him perform Mark Twain live.
Oh, that would be a treat. I mean, he's a Mark Twain aficionado. Of course, his new book on Edgar Allan Poe is out and about. And, of course, he wrote about Kolchak, the Night Stalker, and, of course, Twilight Zone. So he is a man of all seasons.
Yeah. Well, I think Fogg's bought his book because he's a real big Kolchak guy.
Mm.
When we met Fogg, he was dressed up like Carl Kolchak. It was awesome. It was at, I think he dropped in on a Goulardi Fest on us. I think that show is dead now. Oh, that's too bad.
But yeah, your jaw must have dropped when you saw him in that outfit.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, what? You came all the way from New York to come here? Wow. Not like the state, not like the city, New York, but he's from the state of New York. I'm not sure where. That was just a pleasant surprise.
Incredible. But we were speaking about the darkness of Edgar Allan Poe. Yes, he did have some rather dark episodes in his life. Some were his own doing, but you know, his brilliance was his own. You know, you just have to give him kudos for just being able to sit down and put pen to paper and get all of that out.
Yeah. It just makes you wonder. Are you familiar at all with Michael Moorcock, any of his writing? He's a fantasy.
I have heard of him.
He's a fantasy writer.
Of Moorcock's.
A lot of sword and sorcery.
Do you know of any of his stories right off the top of your head?
Oh, yeah. There's my favorites are the Elric of Melma Benet stories. Elric is like he's physically weak. He's an albino. He's from an evil empire, but you kind of empathize with his character a little bit. They're just like, they're naturally evil. I want to say people, but they're more elfin looking, I think. Tapered ears, things like that. And in one of the stories, in one of the stories, he was kind of bored. He went down to see the slaves being tortured because he was kind of bored. And he came to think that only great beauty can come from great suffering. And I thought about that with people like Edgar Allan Poe, and makes you wonder sometimes if that's not true.
I don't think so. I mean, look at Stephen King. As far as I've ever heard, I never heard anything really dark about the guy. I mean, he was a teacher. He decided to take up writing. He had a pretty ordinary childhood from everything I've heard. Didn't have a lousy childhood. He's still married to the same person he's been married to for a while. He said his life's pretty ordinary, but for some reason out of that ordinary little mind has come some pretty darn dark things. I mean, Salem's Lot, The
yeah.
Stand, The Tommyknockers.
I mean, It. Yep.
It. I mean, It. It floats. It floats. It floats.
Well, you know, it's funny, too, though. A lot of the horror people I've met, both famous and quasi-famous or think they're famous or whatever. but they're good, solid people. Many of them are animal lovers. And I think I judge people based on how they treat animals, especially their own. It reveals a lot.
To a degree, I mean, Hitler liked dogs very much, and he was a vegetarian, I'm ashamed to say, but that's true. But
yep.
He was no one I would want to be in the same hemisphere with. Ew.
Well, I think he was mentally ill to some degree. If he wasn't at first, he became that way.
That guy was a different hemisphere unto himself.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. But at the same time, you have people who are, you know, real nice persons, like Ray Bradbury, something with This Way Comes, from all essential purposes, was a really nice fellow.
Yes.
And then you have someone who, on the very other spectrum, you have H.P. Lovecraft. That guy was just not right. To quote Hank Hill, he was just not right.
I have to read more of his work and as well as about him. I feel ashamed that I've underexposed myself to his writings. Mm-hmm. I've always seen it out there,
yeah.
You know, like the old horror mags, there'd be ads for all kinds of paperbacks and this and that. And there was a ton of his works there, and I just never gravitated towards it for some reason. Don't know why.
Well, he is the father of the Cthulhu mythos. Remember Dunwich Horror? That's
right.
His work.
Yep. I will have to. I can't wait till I retire. I can indulge myself in all things creepy. I'd like to think I'm not a totally evil, just partially.
Just a tad for a little spice, and just add a little spice.
No, I think, you know, if someone is mean to animals, they're probably not a very good person.
They're not a good person, period.
Yeah. I don't trust people who don't like animals. It's like a kid.
True.
They're like your kid, man. They rely on you for everything.
Mm-hmm. On YouTube, I think there is something of a documentary about H.P. Lovecraft. I think they even had, what's his name, Guillermo del Toro, who directed The Shape of Water.
Yes.
And, yeah, he's in there as well. And they're talking about how the Cthulhu series and that influenced them. And their opinions on it. So the man was a wonderful writer, but he was just not right in many respects.
So, like, in real life, he was kind of a creepy guy?
Yes. Short answer, yes.
Okay.
Yeesh. And not nice either.
Yeah. Doesn't mean he's not talented, but just not a nice human being.
No. Super, super talented, but he was, ugh. Who was another? Oh, yes, the father of Conan the Barbarian.
Robert E. Howard.
Robert E. Howard. Yeah.
Yeah, he, poor guy. He had a rough life.
Yeah. He did. And also, I think he had something in the end that was akin to the Oedipus complex or...
something like that. He was awful close to his mom, and when she died, he couldn't take it and took himself out.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, wow. I mean, yeah.
Talk about a mama's boy, huh?
Dirt.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
It's a shame. What other crazy fantasy stories could he have come up with, you know? Who knows?
I know. And all the pulp that he killed. And I think he was, who was his, the person he wrote to? I think he wrote to Lovecraft.
He may have.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, they exchanged quite a lot of letters. I mean... which is, I mean, they were both writers. Lovecraft was born and raised around the Eastern Seaboard. He never really left that area. Same with Howard.
Yeah,
he
Howard
was
from
Texas.
Yeah, he never left.
Some little, born and raised in some little dust bowl, podunk backwater town that I think it's still on the map. I think they even have a little museum dedicated to him. That was the only person of any renown that may have come out of that part of Texas.
Let's see. Where was he from? Well, that's a bibliography. That doesn't tell us anything. Hold on here. I'm looking him up right now.
Yeah, please do. But it's just incredible. The man never went anywhere and came up
with
a
spent most of his life in Cross Plains with some time in Brownwood, Texas. Huh. He was interested in boxing.
Cross
he took up boxing.
Really? So he had an interest in the sweet science, as it were.
Yeah. I think he learned to create varying characters by spending a lot of time wandering through a variety of Texas cow towns and boom towns, such as Dark Valley, Seminole, Bront, Poteet, Oran, Wichita Falls, Bagwell, Crosscut, Burkett.
Oh, jeez. Cow towns, indeed. I mean, what did he just followed the herd and... just stomped into the Long Branch Saloon and went up to the bar and said, "Miss Kitty, give me some of that rot gut," and just eavesdropped on all the conversation of the cowpokes.
Yep.
Then took them all out of Texas, put them in the land of Hyboria, gave them a magical enchanted sword, put some wizards and witches in there, and Conan the Barbarian.
You'd like Moorcock. You would like Michael Moorcock if you like Robert E. Howard. Same kind of sword and sorcery. Yeah, here we go. In August of 1930, Howard wrote a letter to Weird Tales praising a recent reprint of H.P. Lovecraft's The Rats in the Walls and discussing some of the obscure Gaelic references used therein. Farnsworth forwarded the letter to Lovecraft, who responded warmly to Howard, and soon the two Weird Tales veterans were engaged in a vigorous correspondence that would last the rest of Howard's life.
That
he became a member of the Lovecraft Circle.
Who? That's kind of a good thing and not a great thing.
Yeah. Lovecraft used to refer to him as Two Gun Bob because of him being from Texas.
Gun Bob.
Oh my gosh.
Unreal. But it is a pity those two couldn't have corresponded and written a story together. That would have been very interesting. Putting
White. Yep.
The Cthulhu universe in the Conan the Barbarian universe, crossing the streams.
Oh, he did have a girlfriend in his life, one, Novaline Price.
Howard did have I think she actually wrote a book about him, too, if I'm not mistaken. So he did break away from Mom for a little bit.
Yep.
And Lovecraft did get married for a while, but he just couldn't make it work. She wanted to move out of that little tiny eastern seaboard town, and he tried it for a while, but he just couldn't manage it, so they broke up. So they had that in common. For some reason, they just couldn't get away from those small towns.
Yeah, I think him taking care of his mom came between them, too,
mm-hmm.
when she got ill.
Oh, well, I don't know. She should have still married him if she wanted him that bad and just locked Mom up in an attic. Where did I get that idea from?
I don't know. That's a good idea. I don't think it's been tried before. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's easy now. You know, it's much more easier than it used to be. I mean, you know, we just speed down, say, just take that up, tell DoorDash, you know, just go up the 3 flights of stairs and just drop it outside of the door out there and knock 3 times and run. And gets all the food you want.
Wow. They got a list of his they got a list of his earnings from writing. Not a whole lot.
Cents.
Well, like for the year in 26, he made $50. 27, 37, 50. His good year was, let's see, 1934. He made $1,853.05. I know part of his story, Weird Tales owed him a lot of money. Weird Tales was always behind paying him.
Mm-hmm. A lot of these pulps did rip off their writers. But you have to remember that $50 back in the 30s, that didn't make that stretch a long, long way. He should have
probably
last
a couple months on that money back then, yep. But
oh
that was
gosh.
His entire year. Nice.
It was harsh. No wonder he took up boxing. He had to hit something.
Yeah. He wasn't hitting the grocery store too often, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That's not funny.
Yeah,
definitely. Nice.
Well, he was not skinny. I saw an image of him online, and he had a Homburg hat on, and he was mm-hmm. not a
yeah, he
skinny guy.
Hefty.
He was a well put thin. Yeah, he
pretty
was
hefty.
A hefty kind of guy. So
not
he
healthy
been,
though. He had heart issues.
Yeah, I think he inherited that from his parents. So he didn't do well in the genetics. But of course, then he probably smoked like a chimney, as everybody else did, provided you could afford tobacco.
Yeah,
and I don't know if he drank.
Doesn't really say a whole lot here. But my goodness, he created some great characters even beyond Conan. Bran McMoran, Cull. Yep, mm-hmm. Cull.
Yeah, he did a sailor character that was had quite the following in the pulps for a while.
Yeah, what the
heck
was his name? Oh, God, he was like a Irish
sailor
fighting.
Sailor Sam or something to that effect.
No.
I can't remember it.
Hold on, I think I have my... Nope, I don't have them here. They're out of reach. My Conan books, or my Robert E. Howard books.
Okay.
I forget his name. Wild Bill Clanton. Wild Bill Clanton.
That's Wild Bill Clanton.
Yeah, those are good stories, too.
That was definitely a takeoff on Cowboy.
Yeah, two
Wild Bill Clanton, the sailor.
Yep.
Sailing the seven seas, and the closest he ever probably got to the water was some mud hole in Texas.
Yep, probably.
So, everyone, raise your favorite beverage to two guys who... were really talented. One, Robert E. Howard, who seemed pretty mild-mannered, an okay kind of guy, had it hard, but didn't let that stop his creativity. And H.P. Lovecraft, very creative, who had some serious issues that would just not fly in this day and age. No, 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 no.
Or any, for that matter.
Or any, for that matter. Well, yeah. Sir, thank you. With that, I must be away.
Yep.
Dave, if you're listening, fabulous picks of show, very dark. Dave, you have a very, very, very maniacal and macabre mind.
Have a good week, folks. We'll see you next Friday at 6:30 Eastern.
Good night.
Good
night.
Good night.
Good night. It's time to say good night.
Kind of sad without the goat.
What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs.
There's the goat.
And it's time for toodaloo.
The key.
Yodeling pickle.
And
ink
cut thing to do. Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Now that wasn't so bad, was it?
It was disgusting.
Do you mind turning off the radio?